1968, beginning of 69, yes, to London after I lost my mother in Jericho during the 6 days war from shooting. Yeah. And then my father was injured and was lying behind the door with blood through his nose cutting. And then the neighbor were looking for him. And then our house was just
demolished.
Damaged. And my mother took her to the hospital, and she died 3 days afterwards. And then we weren't there. I was much younger than now. I was in Amman with my oldest sister. She is also a nurse working at TB hospital in Amman, and with my two brothers, I went to visit them, and all of a sudden the war happened and it closed at Olympic Bridge. We couldn't go see one another. Mm. And my parents, actually I was born in Beit Jala and I have been brought in Jericho. Mm. And then my father, I came from very poor people. Mm. And then my father built a house for us in Jericho. He is a builder. Mm. And not big house, like a bungalow. We lived there. Mm. And my two brothers, they left the school earlier before the end completed. Mm. And they went to work as a laborer in Amman. Mm. And then I had to leave my school also. I was younger to work and to help.
Have you been to the West Bank ever after you
have married? Yes, a few years back, 6 years ago, I was with my husband. I went through the Olympic Bridge, and then I was there, and I saw the tragedy at the Olympic Bridge. Mm. My sister went with me to Jericho, and she has a Jordanian passport, and then I have a Swiss passport, my husband too. Mm. And they let us go through, and then the lady who's carrying Arab passport, which is my sister, yes, let her to stay at this side. My husband said, no, I don't move until also my sister-in-law come with us. Yes. Not because we are European having a Swiss passport to let us through before the other. We go through together. And then I went, I saw everything. Mm. When I went there, we had 1 week there, and I have not been since. And then even I don't know where is my mother's grave, because we don't know when she died. We didn't know really. And 10 days later, neighbor of ours, neighborhood escaped from Jericho to Amman, and he said, your mother passed away. She was calling every one of us, but nowhere.
You couldn't go.
No, my father died afterwards. Mm. And, excuse me. And afterwards, from Amman, someone helped me. I went to London to work as a nurse at Orthopedic Hospital in London almost 2 years and 8 months. And then from London, I've migrated to Australia. And then I left in Sydney 7 years, and I've met my husband. I got married in Australia. And he's very nice, and I am happy since that time.
I'm happy that you're happy.
And I'm very happy to talk to you, really.
Thank you very much, Sophie.
Syria, and it is my best night I have.
Oh, God. Thank you very much, Sophie.
Thank you. Please.
Questions?
It will be quite different. I almost think that I have to apologize, but it is often said that the contact which the Palestinian society has through the Israeli occupation with the further developed Israeli society has its positive effects on the Palestinian society. I'd like to know what you think about it. And I would like to add a second question in connection with this one. How about the feminist movement working together with Palestinian women within Israel, and what about the work with Jewish Israeli feminist groups?
Okay. We have a question of three parts. I will start with the first part, that deals with the position of the Palestinian society, which, of course, it is claimed that the Palestinian society, in contact with the more civilized society, has developed. What shall I tell you? Occupation can never develop anything. You can see it in the health situation. Our hospitals have been robbed and are abused. Even the hospitals which we used to go to freely without paying any fees, now you have to pay fees, which means that only those who have money can go to the hospital. While during the Jordanian regime or during the Arab regime, we did not have to pay for the hospital. Also, there is a fees for education. We never paid fees for education. Now there is, though it started as low fees for governmental education, but now it is rising. This is from the educational point of view, that at least concerning fees, it is implemented. Now, when it comes to the type of books which our students are studying, everything that deals with our history, that reminds the Palestinian of his identity, are removed completely. The level of education is becoming lower and lower. And the student's situation is really pathetic, very, very bad. According to the UNESCO's reports, consecutive reports about the interference of the Israeli authorities in the level of education and the type of teaching and the teachers who are accepted, who are rejected, who are deported from the Palestinian society. So the educational level is being lower and lower. When it comes to economics, now we are the shadow of the Israeli society. We cannot survive without their economy. We are dependent on their economy. They are the ones who put the prices, and they are the ones who reduce the prices. And their economy is getting worse and worse. And we are affected by their economy and by the rivalry or the competition between our farmers and theirs. We cannot compete with them for several reasons. We don't have the same technology like them. And second, because our farmers are not allowed to dig in water from their wells. So we don't have enough water. So this is the economic situation. And of course, trade, everything, even if you want to buy gasoline or sugar or anything, you have to pass through an Israeli dealer and to pay his commission, plus the taxes for the Israeli defense, which defends us, of course. And as I have told you, the economic situation is completely retarded and dependent on the Israeli economic situation. Now, when it comes to land, of course, you have heard about the confiscation of land. You have heard about the confiscation of water. You have heard about the demolishing of houses. So this is from the physical reality. The physical reality of the Israeli society is like this. Now, when it comes to people, how can people, unless you believe that people can live through inspiration or through a higher power, without being related to reality. But this is our reality. Everything is going from bad to worse. Now, when it comes to women, at the beginning, of course, I agree, and I tell you my own feelings, frankly and personally. This is how I felt. When I saw, I'm from Nablus, and I'm Nablusiye. When I saw the Nablus, the Jewish or the Israeli women coming through the Israeli parachutists, women who occupied, who were the first ones who occupied the mountains of Nablus. And I had the opportunity to see them within the military governor's office, because at that time we were with a group of women trying to help the refugees. So I entered into the headquarters of the main military governor's office, and I saw those women. They were in khaki, in military suits, and they behaved in just like men, soldiers. At that time, my feminist reaction towards war and peace and violence and so on was not raised. And I tell you frankly that I felt very jealous, very, very jealous. These women are coming, behaving like men, independent, and shouting and screaming and having bombs within their pockets. I felt extremely jealous. And maybe this gave me some kind of challenge. But this is an independent or an individualistic situation, because most women were so scared from the occupiers that even those who did not have to put scarves at the beginning of occupation, immediately after occupation, they were so scared that they started to put scarves on their heads. What shall I tell you? All the levels of our life is deteriorating. You read, you hear from the newspapers, from the TV, even the Israeli TVs, the demonstration. Our youngsters are learning how to be violent, and even the Jewish youngsters are learning. As you have heard Felicia yesterday, she says that occupation is increasing the youngsters' tendency towards violence, and it is destroying our own psychology, the psychology and the educational situation of our children and the Jewish children. So I don't believe, and I'm dead sure, that our situation is much, much worse under occupation than it has been even under Jordanian rule, especially at this moment, and particularly with the conflicting ideologies and conflicts within the social situation, and the tremendous pressure of the religious groups on women. We are having a very bad time. This is my answer. So this is the first part. Feminist cooperation between our women and the Israeli women. As I have described, we don't have a feminist movement. We have women's program which are in some way or another related in some way or another to parties or to organizations, but these cannot be considered feminists, because their main plans is to just to train the productive power of women. But concerning raising her consciousness as a woman and as a feminist, there is no such a thing. So we don't have a feminist movement. In the Israeli movement, unfortunately, the Israeli movement takes care of women in Uganda, women in Pakistan, women in India. They describe their situation. They study women in Peru. They study women in Mexico. But women next door, they don't care for them. So how can I deal with women who just neglect my existence, just like Golda Meir? What's the difference? And I believe that feminism, if it does not deal with the problem of occupation and the problem of war and peace and education and love and hatred and so on, and keep blinding its eyes from these factors and the reality which we are living in, I think that there is some kind of abortion in this feminism. Now, considering trying to work with Jewish women, we try. For example, we are cooperating with Felicia Langer. We cooperate with Leah Zeimel and women who understand our situation as occupied people, because we are a part of the people. We are not separatists. We cannot separate our struggle from our men's struggle, from the national struggle. So these women who consider our situation, we are ready to cooperate with them, and we started cooperating with them. 2 years ago, I was invited by a women's Jewish organization in San Francisco, and I went there, and I had tremendous, wonderful time with them, and we had so much ideas and so much in common together. But when it comes to taking decisions, unfortunately, neither the Israeli woman can take decisions, nor can I take the decision, because just because I don't have a say in my society, but also because while I am still occupied, I cannot deal equally with a woman who is completely, at least on the national level, is liberated. But in any case, we are ready, and I am ready. We are ready, a group of us, and a number of us, active women, to cooperate with Jewish women on condition that they realize our situation and they accept our fair and just question concerning national liberation. So we are ready. And whenever, wherever they are, whenever I'm invited to such an organization or to such a group, I will be delighted and grateful to accept this invitation.
Als erstes möchte ich meine Bewunderung für Ihre mutige Taten, Ihr Auftreten sagen. Als zweites habe ich gehört, dass ein Roman von Ihnen in Hebräisch übersetzt wurde. Stimmt das?
Yes, it is true.
Und ich möchte fragen, ich meine, nachdem der erste Roman von Ihnen, Ihr erster Roman von Ihnen wurde ja von den israelischen...
Wait. Okay. Dear translator, I don't understand Hebrew except for a few words, so could you continue? Oh, I see. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, fine.
Ich möchte, nachdem Ihr erster Roman von den israelischen Behörden beschlagnahmt wurde, möchte ich wissen, wie das zustande kam, dass Ihr zweiter Roman trotzdem ins Hebräische übersetzt wurde und wie groß die Auflage ist und ob Sie von israelischer oder hebräischer Seite irgendwie Reaktionen bekommen haben.
Concerning the confiscation of my first novel, my friend and colleague Martin, when he described and he mentioned that the confiscation was dealing with the novel after the defeat, and this has a story. I was working in Libya at that time, and I wrote this novel, which describes in detail, in 500 pages, what happened to us in the West Bank during occupation. And at that time, I was completely unaware and completely ignorant of the way of publications and the means of publications. So I thought that all the Palestinian poets and writers publish in Nazareth. So why don't I try to take my novel to Nazareth? And I will not hide from you a secret, because this is what happened. I copied the 500 pages in my daughter's copybooks. among the scratches and drawings of the children. And I thought that it might pass. But then they stopped us on the bridge and they said, what's this? Of course, they stopped us for long, long hours. I will not tell you the details, but this is what happened. They took me to the office where the interrogator is, and the interrogator said, what is this? I said, well, you are seeing, this is a novel. He says, what kind of novel? I was afraid. I told him this is a romantic novel. He said, what's romantic novel? I said, it's about love affair between a man and a woman. This is my novel, which is, in fact, it has an element of truth because it has a man and a woman who are in love. But he did not like it. He was making, you know, marks and circles around all the passages in which I describe the entrance of the Israeli jeeps and the Israeli army and the bombs and shouting and all the wounded which I have seen and the refugees, thousands, and all the horrible things which I have witnessed. And he said, and what about this? Is this romantic? I said, well, this is the background. He said, now, madam, this is really silly. I tell you what, you have kids. My daughters were really young. You have kids. I'll take your ID and your identity card's number. I will take your name and address, and I will call you after. Before saying that, he said, I have to arrest you. I said, according to the Israeli law, you cannot arrest me unless you have a permission or a special order. And until now, you did not pass, according to the publication's rule, you did not pass my novel to the censorship. So how can you arrest me? Why should you arrest me? He said, okay, you have children, so I will take your number and name and address, and you go home, and I will call you. I went to Nablus, and I stayed for about 2 weeks. Nobody called me, nothing. And I was really anxious to go out because I was afraid. So I left the West Bank. And after 1 or 2 days, the Israeli jeeps came and surrounded the house and asked for me. This was at 12 at night, at noon. And my mother sent me a notice saying, don't ever come to the West Bank because these jeeps are coming to ask for you. And again, they came at midnight and asked for me. I wasn't there. The personnel who was in charge of Nablus at that time was called Yusuf Tabari. Now he is dead. I heard that he was assassinated. And he called Rimonda Tawil, who is my friend and my neighbor, and he told her, your friend Sahar has written an explosive book which she will be punished for. So you better tell her not to, if she wants her safety and security, never to come to the West Bank. Of course, I need to go to the West Bank. It's my country. I don't have any other country except the West Bank, and I will refuse such an order. So I went to the West Bank next year. By next year, we were having the massacre in Jordan, and the Israelis were trying their best to win our, sympathy by saying, you see, the Arabs are bad and we are good and so on. So there was real, not sympathy, but there was some kind of relief on the borders. And so I entered without any problems. But I went to Israeli friends, progressive friends, and I told them this story. I said, I have worked hard on this novel and tried to get it for me. And they made contacts on the highest level. They tried their best several times to get the confiscated novel, but they couldn't. Several times, several years, we tried, and it was completely erased. Nobody knew what happened to it. Now, this is concerning the first book. My second and third novels were not just confiscated. They are prohibited until now. They are in the West Bank and in Gaza. They are withdrawn. They were withdrawn from the libraries, from the municipality libraries, and they were withdrawn from the bookshops, and they are not available in the West Bank and in Gaza Strip. While In Israel, since it was published and translated by an Israeli publisher, it is available. Now, why is it available in Israel and not available in the West Bank? I don't know. You explain to me why, if you know why the rules are like this in Israel. I don't know why is it available. It is available in the West, in the Israeli, in Israel, and not available in the West Bank.
I just know that from some cabaret and things like that are maybe permitted to present in Tel Aviv, but they are not allowed to say it in Jerusalem. And I know some other things which happen similar to you, so it's a practice that progressive people, you cannot oppress too much progressive and intellectual people. They have to think that the Israeli government is good. And so they would like to make even maybe a little better impression. And the other Israeli, maybe they realize and say, leave the country, Israel, as you leave the country.
Thanks for the explanation. I accept it. Now for the reaction. How was the reaction in Israel towards my novel, Cactus? Of course, you cannot give a final conclusion or a judgment unless you meet many people. And unfortunately, I met just a number of these people, and all those people whom I met, the Israeli people, said that they liked my book very much. And one of them, a woman, told me that this is the first time in my life I consider and realize that the Palestinians are just like anybody else. They have their problems of love and hatred and women and men and so on. So she said that in certain instances and certain moments in the book, she cried. This is what she told me. And other people from the intellectual Israelis, they were very, very sympathetic towards it. And that's why my second book, Sunflower, which will be translated and will appear in the market here by Unions Verlag next year, it is being under translation right now by Mifras, which is a publishing house by a group of Israeli professors at the universities, Israeli universities, and will come out very, very soon, because I have been sent a notice saying that it's coming out soon, and I received this notice just before 2 months, and I suppose that it might be appearing right now in the market. So this was the reaction. I think that they like it.
Zum Buch. Es kann draußen am Büchertisch gekauft werden und Sahar Khalifa ist auch bereit, etwas hineinzuschreiben. Da können sich vielleicht dann auch noch im kleinen Rahmen weitere Gespräche ergeben. Ja.
I have a question. I am an Arab man.
Welcome.
Yeah, Palestinian. And I think that if you ask an Arab man why you put the woman under the pressure, he would say, because I go to work, I earn money. He would also say that because the religion, Muhammad also said that the woman is weaker than the man, I am more strong than she, and all of this stuff. And if even you ask an Arab woman what you think about that, most of them she would find it's normal. She's weak. The man is strong, the man should protect her, and all of this stuff. And I find, I'm not against what you were talking, but I am so curious, or I wonder how the women, they could liberate themselves as long as there is religion in the Middle East. I think that the emancipation of the woman, it should come on the expense of the religion. And how could it come?
This is also a crucial question and a critical question. Now, to be realistic and to be frank about it, women here in the West, whether Jewish or Christian, know that women in religion are also not treated fairly. Don't you agree with me? Yes.